Hello and welcome to another edition of Banana Island Living Podcast. My name is Sade and I am truly excited to be speaking to our guest today, but I'm not going to tell you yet. Just hold on. First things first, make sure you've subscribed wherever you get your podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and then share with your friends. So my guest today, let him say hello first before I introduce him.
Hello, everyone. I'm pleased to be here.
Aha. My guest today is the phenomenal Femi Babalola. If you haven't heard about him, well, you owe me big time. You will owe me big time because you will definitely be thanking me later. So I'll give you his backstory like I normally do, but I'll tell you what. First thing, bi-coastal living, tick. Sorted diaspora children, tick. Keeping your heritage whilst being abroad, tick. And modesty, tick.
Oh my goodness.
Okay, so Femi Babalola was born on the 29th of July, 1963. And he was born in Lagos in Nigeria. And his family background is quite interesting because his father was dealing in industrial and medical gas, and his mother was a specialist teacher of the deaf. At that time, that must have been something not that many people were doing. You went into legal practice. Any reason why you went into law?
No, actually. No one of those will say they've always wanted to study law.
No, you didn't. You just went.
I actually wanted to study international relations at the University of Ife. And I went in to submit my admission letter. Happened to be that the head of department was someone I knew, family friend. So he looked at my A-levels result. And he said, no, you'd be wasting your A-levels to study international relations for first degree.
That's why I like Nigerian lecturers and teachers. Everybody is your father. They just like, what? What are you studying? I beg you.
Exactly. And just basically took me across from Faculty of Administration to the next block, which was the Faculty of Law. Yeah, so right. And he told the dean, here's my nephew, and he's going to study law. He did not discuss it with me.
And you had no choice.
I had no choice.
Everybody is an uncle or an auntie.
Exactly. They did look at me and say, oh, this is very good. We want students like this in law. Yeah.
And that was it.
That's how I became a law student. And I told him how upset I was and that I'll remember him, but not for good. I promised him. But guess what? 2 months into my law faculty in Ife, there was a competition for amongst law students for scholarship with Gulf Oil Company, now right. Chevron.
Yeah.
And I actually came first in all of Nigeria. And I think there were only 2 law students that were given the scholarship then. I was one of the 2. And so I went back to this family friend to now thank
to
him.
To thank him. You dobaled.
I did, actually. Forcing me to study law. And I think it made a difference because it was fun. We were doing holiday job with Gulf Oil Company then in Mandela's house on Broad Street. And of course, I always have spare cash. So,
so it was that's fun, something you want to thank him for. So you went into corporate and commercial law.
Yes. I finished at Ife, traveled to England in 1987.
As one does.
Exactly. And it was the height of Margaret Thatcher's privatization of the utilities, privatizing electricity board, water board. And I got a job with NatWest Stockbrokers on their privatization desk. And so it was an area of interest for me. I found it very interesting, actually.
No, but was it easy to get that kind of a job? Were you British or you were just...
No, I wasn't actually. I was born in Lagos, Nigeria.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And so how did you wangle that?
Yes. But I think life was pretty easy
Much
there.
Simpler then, yes.
Yes, and fortunately, Nigerians were still believed and believable. So basically, I came and I was doing a course in arbitration.
Yeah.
And I said, look, while I'm doing this course, I'd like to work. So I went to the home office to apply for a work permit. And I was granted. So it wasn't complicated. You know. But eventually I got married.
You got married in the UK?
No, actually. My wife is British, but we got married in Nigeria. We came back to Lagos to get married. And then, of course, traveled back to England. Started raising a family in the UK.
And all your kids were born in the UK?
Yes.
So how do they, I checked you out online and you don't have much of a presence, but your kids have amazing presence online. I mean, that's why I said sorted children, tick. Do they live in Nigeria at all?
Yes, we made it clear to them that they are growing up in England and it's a privilege for them to have the Nigerian heritage. And to also have the British background that they obviously have. But from very young age, they've always come to Nigeria. It's a must. We only travel
every holiday.
Elsewhere in the world. Every holiday. We only travel elsewhere in the world during the Easter break.
Yeah.
Summer, they must be in Nigeria. Christmas, they must be in Nigeria. So summer, they will usually spend with grandparents, both sides.
Fantastic. So they learn to speak Yoruba?
Particularly the first one.
Wow.
She's very good at Yoruba. The other two could speak a bit, understand very well, and we made it a conscious decision that they should know family. When I came back to Nigeria, I moved to Ikoyi. My family church is in Yaba.
Yes.
But I'll drive all the way from Ikoyi to Yaba every Sunday, just so that they know that not every of their friends and relatives live in Ikoyi.
Yes. I'm taking notes, because diaspora children is a major problem.
Yeah.
That's one of the key things that I am trying to make sure that I tell everybody about, how to keep your children connected. Because
yeah.
I looked at your daughter. I mean, I'll tell you about his daughter in a minute, one of them anyway. and I'm going to talk about the others as well. But I noticed she has on her Twitter handle, Yorubadi. And I thought, that is such an amazing thing. Not just say, oh, I'm African or whatever, but she actively, identifies as a Yoruba and then puts that spin, that English spin on it. so it's just sort of enjoying and thrilling and reveling in their identity, which is what so many people have failed or not even tried to do. So, gosh, I'm in total awe. So tell me more. Did they come home to do youth corps?
Yes, actually. The first one came home to do youth corps.
Wow.
But then she found an opportunity with BBC.
Yes.
She started as a writer and journalist with BBC, actually. Then the immediate younger sister is just here on youth corps. And the last one, Demilade, is also here now, currently doing her NYSC.
I'm impressed. First of all, that they even agreed to do it.
No, actually, except for the youngest, who was looking forward to doing it, it was tough convincing the other two to do it.
I know.
Yeah, because they just—I don't know what they've heard about NYSC. I just, well, it's your country, and it's not so much about the opportunity that might come up in the future. It's so much about heritage. You've got to put something here.
Yeah, and learning what's happening. And as I say, what can you do for your country?
Exactly.
Because I know when people come up to me and say, oh, can I just get somebody to sign for me? I say, what? And you want the country to change? How can you expect the country to change when you're not willing to even put in that little bit of effort?
Exactly.
But it's just making sure that they experience what happens here. Even if they and you give them choices, because they may choose to come back or not.
Exactly.
But they have that reference point.
Let them have the choice.
I'm totally impressed. And when did you come back?
When did I come back? 1997. And it was actually again, well, I'll say by chance, but then I've always felt that Nigeria is it for me. And it's never about money or economic opportunities, simply because it's home. But then This same president now was the chairman of an intervention agency called the PTF, Petroleum Trust Fund.
Oh, yes, yes.
And yeah. I was actually consulting for the Petroleum Trust Fund as both a lawyer and development consultant. So it was through PTF that I actually came back to Nigeria.
Ah, so you had a soft landing. You didn't just wing it.
I had a soft landing. I confess. I didn't appreciate it then, but seeing a lot of my other contemporaries trying to come back, I think later on I knew that I had a very soft landing, actually. Yeah. So I've been back since 1997.
But did you bring the family back or not?
No. The kids were in school, so it wasn't really on the cards that they should come in the sense of coming home with me at that time.
Yeah.
In any case, they were always coming home summer and Christmas.
Yeah.
So it was almost like they were in boarding school in England as opposed to living in England.
Yeah. But you didn't choose a boarding school route in the UK. You chose a day school.
For the first two, boarding for the youngest.
Right. Because that's another whole story with Nigerians in diaspora and bicoastal living. How much of their culture do they retain if they go to boarding school? How present are you in their lives if they're in? I mean, it's bad enough living abroad, but then they go into boarding school. That's they're immersed in that culture and yours sort of diminishes every year. So what is your business model and how are you making it work? Living abroad, living in Nigeria, how do you make it work? Because, I mean, a few weeks ago, I ran into a friend of mine in Banana who's selling up because his family are not coming back. And he's made that choice. He wants to be with his grandchildren.
Yeah.
He, you know, he has to decide where to retire to. And he's selling up and moving to the US.
Yeah.
And I think that's a real challenge for a lot of people.
Particularly, the current state of Nigeria.
The current state of Nigeria, and also the children are embedded in that community.
Exactly.
You want to see your grandchildren.
Yeah. A lot of these things don't actually happen by accident. You want to see your grandchildren, you want to be near your children.
Yeah.
One may be fortunate that a particular grandchild or child suddenly takes to Nigeria. But what I always say to my children and to younger people generally is that Nigeria is not a holiday destination. So it's not a place you come for a week during Christmas, have fun, and then go back.
Yeah.
It's home. So it's home that must be taken with all its challenges and responsibilities. By the nature of my work, I travel quite a lot, many countries, and I sit in meetings where they tell you are meeting with this particular bank in Europe. And apart from the two senior guys that will be in the meeting, if it's a meeting of five people, the other three will be people of your children's age. And you can see them already taking leadership role within their community, within their country, within their culture.
Yeah.
And you're asking yourself, who are the people playing this role back home in Nigeria? And they're going to be the people that have struggled through the education system that Nigeria has, if you can call it a system at all.
Yeah.
And not because they are not good, but the country has not offered them the best. And why are they the ones there? Because they are the ones that are available. So one must actually encourage that cross-country, should I say, presence. And then in terms of relocating, I think that for people relocating, they are not doing anything that is bad. That's what they want. It's a matter of choice, you know.
Yeah.
But the example I like to give people is that I'm in England. I can read the Financial Times from January 1st to December 31st. FT is on the average 80 pages a day. So on some days, we supplement 100 pages. And everything I read in the FT will be news.
Yeah.
I will not have any background story to it. I will not know any MP to call by first name and say, what's going on here? I will not know any minister I can say, I read this in the FT. Is this true? It's impossible for me to read newspapers in Nigeria for a day. Forget a year. and not know the people behind it. And those are the things that tell me that no matter how wealthy I am, no matter how successful I think I am, say in a country like Britain, I'm still not part of the society.
You have a glass ceiling you're going to hit.
I won't even call it a glass ceiling necessarily. It's just natural. It's just natural. It's just going to be pure chance and coincidence if I know three MPs.
Yeah.
At a personal, it's home.
Yeah.
As someone of African descent, and I tell my children that in Britain, in England, you cannot be English. You can be British, but you cannot be English.
Yeah.
It's just like, and anyone else can't come from outside Nigeria. I'll give you the example of our very good neighbors here in Nigeria, the Lebanese. Many of them are Nigerians.
Yeah.
They carry Nigerian passports, which is okay, but they can never be Yoruba. They can never be Fulani.
Yeah, that's true.
So the same thing here, there is a connection that some people have to home, that they are just here because it's home, not because it's the best place to be, not because they don't see all the chaos going on around, not because they don't feel like they just want to get out sometimes, like a lot of us do.
Yeah.
So I know that people are selling up on Banana. Same thing I've heard about VGC, Nikon Town, all the upscale estates, a lot of properties are becoming empty because people are just disenchanted with the system. And they feel that there is no justification to encourage their children or grandchildren to come over.
To come back.
Yeah. And yeah, it can be worrisome. I see the point of those who are selling up and moving on. But I also will encourage people actually to say that, give it a chance.
Yeah.
Nobody will fix this place for us.
Except us.
Except us. There is no doubt about that. There is no. It will never get fixed without us.
So how is Gracefield? I mean, I don't know if we know about Gracefield, but Gracefield is an amazing estate with the top kind of infrastructure you can think of.
Thank you.
You mentioned Nikon, you mentioned Banana, but you didn't mention your own.
Because our own is in the making.
Yeah.
And Gracefield is an island development.
Yeah.
Initially planned for 100 hectares. We are now expanding with the approval of both federal and state governments. We are now expanding beyond 100.
Wow.
And it's again our own answer to some of the things we've seen in Nigeria and in Lagos in particular. The sort of things we look forward to when we are traveling to Europe. We just want clean air. We want ability to walk on the street. Even if we have not gone to the park in the neighborhood of our homes in Britain, we are happy that the park is there.
It's there and your lungs are breathing.
Exactly. Those are things that are normal. And personally, at a personal level, I'm actually upset when I see those things being put forward as luxury in Nigeria. They are not
luxury.
Well,
that freaks me out. And you know, park view is no longer, there's no park to view anymore.
To view, exactly, and it's park view.
They've concretized the park and they can't view it anymore. So, of course, the place floods.
Exactly. You know, so it's deliberate to say that we can do it. So it's much more beyond just trying to provide a very good neighborhood. The intention is to make it an LEZ. That's a low emission zone.
Yeah.
In Britain now, they have even ULEZ, ultra low emission zones.
And you pay.
Exactly.
Don't
and this can
Britain.
Be done.
Yes.
While we are building the island, already we have a franchise for EVC stations, electric vehicle charging stations.
Oh, fantastic.
Because it's going to happen. Even while we are building it, already we have a telecom mast on the island to be sure that everyone is connected. Power generator is not going to be allowed. And
so where do you get your power from? Because when I saw the place, it was so impressive.
Thank you.
But my one question was electricity.
Yeah.
Are you on the grid or not?
We are totally off grid.
Wow.
And we do not intend to get on the grid. Again, because we believe that we allow the system to force very unintelligible conversation on us as citizens.
Mm.
When they tell you about something like 4,000 megawatts, 8,000 megawatts, the national grid has collapsed. these are not normal conversation points for citizens elsewhere yes. in the world. I'm sure if you ask the chairman of Cadbury in Britain, he doesn't even know the megawatts Britain produces.
No.
That's a major manufacturing outfit. If you ask the managing director of Ford Motors, he probably doesn't know the megawatts, because it should not, it is not normal.
But this is a problem all along the West African coast now, isn't it? The power issue.
For me, it's not the power issue. Actually, it's a citizens' issue.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, because there are ways you don't engage with your government. You don't have to shout. You don't necessarily have to carry placard. Most people already have generators.
Yeah.
If you can't afford it, it's a question of, well, I run my generator for only 6 hours a day, maybe that's night. Disconnect from the grid, because it's unbelievable that the same government that is privatizing is also still not giving power.
Yeah. I don't know how that works.
And then we have the issue of meters. You give me power, you have not given me meter. And all we need to tell the power companies is, can you go to a fuel station, fill up the tank of your vehicle?
And not show me how much I owe you. Much,
and you want me to pay?
Yes. Yeah, so.
You know, but somehow in Nigeria, we think that it's actually possible not to supply meter. And you say you are giving me power. So
estimated bill.
So yes. Just get us away from those sort of conversations. We are not on the grid at all. We retain the services of a power company, actually from London, but a lot of Nigerians are involved in that one, Aspen. They are providing power for us on the project, and we are happy with their service. They've started, so it's not something we are thinking of starting.
So are there people on the island as we speak, building or not?
Yes. We've just started building. We started last year. That was when the pandemic struck.
Oh, gosh. Yes.
We have the first estate of a complex of 4 blocks of apartments, 21 in each block. So that's 84 units. It's under construction. And we are very happy that we've been able to attract a major agric chain management company, Famfort. It's a Dutch-Nigerian agric chain management company. So they are building their campus on Gracefield Island. So we are pleased with that, because it's the sort of facility we'd like to attract to the development to distinguish it from the regular estate. So there is a common phrase in Lagos, everybody uses it, but the best way to describe this is when they say live, work and play.
Well, that's the new model, isn't it now?
Yeah, but actually in Nigeria, you don't have a lot of truly live, work and play. And I say that a lot of prime developments, I want to mention their names, and I say that residents actually just go to their homes to sleep. They don't live there. You know, you sleep at night, you wake up in the morning, then you get out.
Banana was supposed to be slightly different, where they had one end was like commercial.
Commercial.
And the other end was residential. And then the middle strip is sort of like quasi, where you have the shops and things like that. Is that what your business model is, like a mixed?
No, totally different.
Right.
Because to build a community, it has to be very intentional.
Yeah.
If you look at the commercial strip, apart from the eastern end of Banana Island, the commercial strip in the center came almost as an afterthought.
Yes, absolutely.
Most residents have already developed their shopping habits.
And when they found there was nothing to support the living.
Exactly.
we were starving over the weekend.
You know, if I take Banana Island as an example, it's the sort of development where residents should have option of at least 5 places to eat. During the weekend.
I know.
You know, it's, and it doesn't exist.
No.
If your driver comes upstairs and says, look, the car's flat tire, you know that it's 5 kilometers at least away from Banana Island to have that done.
Well, you have to call AA to come and rescue you.
Exactly. No, but this is very intentional. We are creating a retail presence, and we are working with off-takers to get the brands in.
Fantastic.
So,
but what I always struggle with is the pace of development and the surrounding infrastructure. Like, Banana has that arterial road, and we're all sort of stuck there. if there's a problem on that road. Nikon takes forever to get through, to get there. VGCR, that one is a whole day's palaver. So how does one get out of this sort of, you know, you have a lovely place, but then to get out, especially during the NSARS, a lot of people would think, how do I get out of, is there water I can jump on or something? Is there any way out? So it's not just one road leading to this place.
Yeah, thanks, Shade, for that question. It's actually a very important question. It's a key urban planning and town management question you've just asked there. And it's actually very disappointing that almost all premium developments in Lagos have access roads that are afterthought, or they look like an afterthought. You can take it even from medium one like Dolphin Estate.
Yeah.
You can take it from Osborne Phase 2. You can take it from Banana Island.
Nikon,
everything is afterthought. Yeah. Now, for Gracefield Island, it was an issue. We want to believe we've addressed it halfway. The only access we had when we started the project was the Chevron Road.
Yeah.
And so once it's blocked, we are stuck. We are locked in.
Yeah.
But on the master plan itself, the Lagos State Master Plan, the Lekki Regional Master Plan, they have two roads planned, or maybe just proposed. They have the one they call the Lagoon Highway. There's another one they call the Lekki Regional Road. The Lekki Regional Road will start from VGC and link directly to Lekki Phase 1 without going through Lekki Expressway at all.
Yeah.
And then eventually will link to the Fourth Mainland Bridge. And we've been very fortunate. Our project is actually in joint venture with Lagos State Government. So we've been very fortunate in our communication channel with government. The new governor, come to think of it, Shade, exactly 1 year ago today, promised to start work on the Lekki Regional Road exactly a year ago today, 26th.
And?
Yeah. And he kept his promise.
Has it happened? Oh, wow.
Yes, they've started work on the road.
That's incredible. Yeah. A politician that keeps his promise.
Yes. He kept his promise. They've started work on the road, and the work is going at a very good pace.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so we know that we have an alternative away from Chevron Drive, away from Lekki Expressway. So we also believe that the other ones will follow, which is the water transportation. Yeah.
So you have your own water, presumably?
Yes, we do.
Okay. Now, knowing all these issues and where you are now, if you had known what you know now, what would you have done differently?
What would we have done differently? I'm not sure there'll be anything significant. Maybe on our marketing.
Right.
And I'll tell you why. First, I think it's actually an advantage that we didn't know certain things. We did not know of certain challenges we were going to come across. If we knew
and if
about
you'd known, you probably wouldn't have started.
I can assure you, I'm not sure we would have started. But thank God we are here, you know. But the market would probably have been different because we underrated the quality of what we are doing with all sense of modesty and how that would be taken in the marketplace, you know. So we just felt, well, there are other projects around, and we should just try and be conservative in our marketing and in our pricing, you know. But having said that,
would you have charged more? Is that what you were saying?
Yes, we would have charged more. But having said that, there was no track record as well of us doing something similar in the past.
Because I saw some of the companies and the infrastructure you were putting there, and I'm thinking, ooh, these are grown-up boys. How on earth is this going to wash its face? Is it washing its face now?
Yes, it is. It was a bit tight at the beginning, but we knew that we had to be conservative in our planning.
Yeah.
And can you imagine when we started, the worst case scenario for foreign exchange for us was 150 naira to the dollar.
No, don't even mention it.
That was the worst case scenario.
I feel sick at the thought of it,
And
so
to think that
your projections were way off.
Totally way off. But we also knew that we had to work with the best of the best in terms of partners, in terms of our planning. And those things have come back to be of greater advantage to us now. They are paying for themselves the cost we incurred. And we also knew that commercial bank debt in Nigeria.
Oh, my goodness.
would be something to almost run away from. But I haven't said
that. Well, they slash your risk rates.
I mean, yes. And people talk about that, actually. Yeah, interest rate is very high, unreasonably high. But I do not think that interest rate is the issue for us in for us on our own project.
Yeah.
You see, because, and I still think a lot of businesses also wrongly attribute the difficulty in terms of commercial bank debt to interest rate. I don't think so. You see, that's simple economics. Can I borrow at 30%? If my margin is even 40%, maybe if I borrow at 30%, I'm still okay with 10%
margin.
It makes
sort of sense.
Yeah, so it's the other conditions that come with commercial bank debt in Nigeria that are stifling.
Yeah.
And I think that, again, a lot of businesses succumb to those conditions when we don't really need to.
You mean they sign up not reading the small print or the fine print or not haggling or bagging? No,
I think we create a situation where we feel we are desperate.
Yeah, that you're a supplicant.
Exactly. So we sign up, not because they are small print. You see them.
Yeah, but they say, oh,
we accept
I haven't
them
got
anyway.
A choice.
Exactly. But you've got a choice. If every one of us turns down those loans on those atrocious terms, well, they'll have to find something to do with the money because they must pay interest to the depositors.
Do you know, it's funny you say that because last week I had this conversation with my bankers. I said, this is the interest rate you said, but you're telling me that, and you didn't quantify what exactly that would be. There would be legal charges, there would be this charges.
Yeah, management charges.
But I said, I'm not saying there shouldn't be charges, but I want to know what they are up front. I don't
arrangement
want...
fee?
Exactly, let me know. You're saying 18%, 19%, 17%, fine. But all the other bits, I don't need to sign off. And now, you know, they're calling.
Exactly.
You
see, but you see, in addition to that, Nigerian banks don't give you a loan and leave you alone. Then they say they are appointing a consultant, a project manager.
That's what I thought. You know, all those dodgy
are the
things that I don't know. I need to know up front. I don't want any surprises. And then the other thing is they'll now call in the loan immediately, very soon after when they know that you're not in a position to pay.
Exactly.
So what's the point of that? It's to sucker you in, give you the money at the highest point of exposure, then call it in.
I think it still boils down to, like I said, citizenship issues, you know, because the banks themselves accept very oppressive regulatory regime from the central bank.
Yeah, no, it's we're all sort of supplicants
so
somewhere.
It's just a circle.
And it's not so much that they don't know their rights, but they just feel, oh, there's no point. I said, well, if you don't give
they know their right, like you said, but you know that if you resist it, your competitor is going to accept it behind you, and then your competitor becomes a friend of the CBN. They get all the concessions. But ultimately, we have to decide as a people how we want to live.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Yeah, I'm exhausted already. So tell me, how on earth did you raise such incredibly talented children?
Oh, my goodness.
Or is it not you? It's your wife. Because your wife is truly amazing.
I must give her most of the credit.
No, 90%, because you're in Nigeria half the time.
Yes, but the school fees are to be paid.
Yes.
Yeah, but I remember because we live in London.
Yeah.
And all the girls schooled outside London. So she had to do long drive for the ones that are not in boarding school.
So why did you pick outside London, even though you lived in London?
Because those were the schools that we felt comfortable with. All of them went to independent schools.
Yeah.
You know, and those were the schools we felt comfortable with. And let me suggest that I played along because my wife chose the schools.
I knew it.
All I needed to do was, okay, how much is the school fees? Can I afford it? Yeah. Okay. Let's do it. You know, so, but like you rightly said, it's about that grounding more than anything else. And it's not being religious to say, if I say, well, we thank God. But also even in England, one of the things we decided was that we were not going to railroad them into the typical Nigerian setting of taking them to, with apologies to Nigerian churches. We are not going to take them to Nigerian churches.
Pentecostal.
No, there is no point. Well, fortunately, they didn't go to state school. And we were not going to take them. They live in England, so let them go to church that is in England. There's not just
church
Nigerian church in England. So they are going to regular church, I would say. And I think all those one things help to ground them so that they are not necessarily religious, but they know God. And
because that's a challenge. A lot of their generation who were raised abroad sort of lost their religion a bit. I have a friend who ran, actually, you know, a structural engineer we're working with. His family were in Canada and he was in Nigeria, paying school fees, as they say. And then he suddenly left the project we were on and said, ah, I had to put my children in Nigerian churches or Pentecostal churches or they're going off the rails. I'm going to sit with them. We're going to stay in the church. And I know why he was doing that. He wasn't overly religious before, but he just saw that he was losing them. And that was one way of hanging on.
Yeah, sometimes we let the children get detached if we take them to Nigerian churches. You see, because they have friends, non-Nigerian friends, that it just doesn't connect with the society in which they are. And then a lot of Nigerian churches are overtly religious. They do things that actually have no direct connection with the worship itself. No. So they spend 4 or 5 hours in church, and out of that, 90% of the time is about other things other than pray, worship, and read the Bible and go home.
And I mean, your daughter, shall I mention it? I mean, she's just written this. I mean, she's written a few books. Like you said, she worked at the BBC, but then she's gone incredibly. I mean, she's just viral now. She's written this book. Love in Color. I was at Waterstones last week, and there it was on the bestseller list and New York Times. What I like is the fact that, like I said, she wears her Yoruba thing as a handle. She throws Yoruba words, and on Twitter, she's all over the place, you know, and also being able to straddle that social media thing without the hate. Because one thing I've noticed in that generation, and I say that generation because I'm practically geriatric now.
Oh, what do you want me to call myself then?
You're kind, but not quite. I know the truth is that they're so thin-skinned and it's difficult to get the charm out of them. Your children are charming and they use social media in a light way without engaging with the hate, and they're standing, dying on this soapbox at the same time, you know, advancing their own careers. It's quite strategic. And it's interesting, you say you're not on social media.
Yeah, I'm not.
So, I mean, they're just truly awesome. So, Is the use of English also, I'm in awe of, really clever use of the English language. Mm-hmm. Is that your wife as well, not you?
I think I can take some credit there.
Yes, right.
I think I can take some credit there, you know, because one of the things, they grew up seeing books all around.
Okay.
They say books all the time, like journals, like Reader's Digest, as a rule, they just read it. I remember those days, even as 4-year-olds, 5-year-olds, when we are traveling abroad, the first thing they do when we get to airport is go to the bookshop, buy a book to read on the plane, buy a book to read on the ship, if we're on a cruise, you know. So they've always grown up around, but like you rightly said, it's also about, look, this is your root. And it's part of life. It doesn't need to be El Dorado in Nigeria. For it's home. It's home.
It is what it is. I mean, this is who you are.
Exactly.
You don't need to be apologetic, but you also don't need to be, you know, just
exactly.
Just deal with
and
it.
Also being British is part of your heritage. Again, yeah. There is no need to apologize for it. Just use it to the best advantage.
I said in a previous podcast, they seem to be able to be their whole selves and not diminish themselves in any way. Because I see even on the names, they put all the do-re-mi or the accents yes. of the Yoruba thing. Yeah. And a lot of people anglicize their names or they take on a different persona just to get on and to blend in. So it's not, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's to make life easier. But they haven't diminished themselves at all. And that's a real accomplishment, I tell you.
Thank you.
No,
thank you.
It's a real... So now that you've ticked all these boxes by coastal living, modesty, keeping your heritage, sorted children, what is the one thing on your bucket list?
What one thing?
Yeah.
I think it's Nigeria.
Right. What do you mean?
It's Nigeria. You know, Nigeria is lacking not a million things, just one thing.
What?
And I don't know what that one thing is.
You had me there. I was all poised to say, right, finally somebody identified the one thing. And you're now telling me you don't know what that you one know, thing is.
I'll tell you why I'm saying I don't know what that one thing is. A lot of people tell you it's leadership, it's followership and all that. When the pandemic struck and the whole world went into lockdown, I was really pleased. Why? Because I believe that we need to take religion out of the life of our country.
Yeah.
As a country, we need to take religion out.
Yep. Just take responsibility for our actions.
Exactly. So I just said, wow, these guys can't go to church or mosque or the shrines for the next 2-3 weeks. Then they will know that the world is actually theirs to shape.
Meanwhile, Nigerian churches were one step ahead of you. We were on WhatsApp, we were Zooming. In fact, the fellowship really grew and they were collecting money by transfer.
Exactly, by transfer. You know? Yes. So, and I was really disappointed that we came out of lockdown only to get as more religious as we can.
Even more religious. I mean, even serious.
For me, I've always wished that religion would be out of our lives. And taking religion out does not mean taking God out. In fact, taking religion out means creating space for God.
You mean organized religion?
Organized religion, yeah.
Right.
You know, okay. Because it's really dragging us back. And we justify all atrocities through religion.
And we don't hold people accountable because of religion.
Exactly.
God will do it.
Exactly.
God will do it.
So, yeah. So that would be... Okay. That one.
So I take it your Sunday morning is chill, not church.
Actually, yes, it's pandemic. But before
that's your story, and you're sticking to it.
again, when the children were young, we went to church every Sunday because we needed to ground them
in something.
There must be an anchor other than something that is external. We want something internal. So that was every Sunday. Then, but as a rule, I also encourage them now that they're adults that go to church, but don't go to church as a matter of habit or compulsion, you know, so that because if you go every Sunday simply because it's Sunday, it becomes routine, it becomes religion. You must actually be free to say, I'm not going this Sunday and I'm just going to read my Bible at home or I'm going to do something else, even if it's only one or two Sundays a month. So I'll say Sunday morning is both, is either
church
and chill.
But, you know, it's funny how you said you made them go to church when they were younger, because I think the English language owes so much to the church. The beauty of the language sometimes. You just say, gosh, even if you're not religious, like some hymns, like pavilioned in splendor and guarded with praise. Yeah. I mean, those words are so, I mean, they're beautiful if you're into the language. And I think your children's facility with the language must have something to do with their, you know.
Church attendance.
Yeah, church, hymns and the Bible, some words there, and depth of understanding of the language. So, yeah. So everything you've done has been intentional.
I hope so.
Yeah. But who do you admire most?
No doubt. Rohelala Mandela, popularly known as Nelson Mandela. I've read his two autobiographies.
Yes.
The strength of character, the courage to admit to his faults.
Yeah.
The openness with which he lived his life. The tremendous capacity to forgive.
Well, some people have a problem with that.
Yeah, tell me.
Yes, we'll get to that. No, because they said that, you know, the problem, the ease of forgiveness, and I'm not necessarily subscribing to this. It's just saying that he gave the people, the whites who committed so many atrocities, he gave them such an easy pass that those inequalities are now showing the stress lines now.
I don't think so, actually. If you look at what Mandela's done, because he knew his task.
Yeah.
His task was to actually unite the nation.
Yeah.
Get the best of all the cultures. That was why they gave him the credit for the Rainbow Nation.
Yeah.
And weld them into one nation.
Yeah, because the Inkatha Freedom Party and all these others, it wasn't just the whites or the FW
exactly.
and everything. There were lots of competing nationalities.
Exactly, even amongst the blacks.
Absolutely.
And he welded everyone into one nation, at least to the best of his ability. For me, if I was going to hold him to anything, hold anything against him, it would be because he promoted some blacks based on loyalty to their parents.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Thabo Mbeki became the president after him because he was Thabo Mbeki's father's friend.
And Thabo Mbeki was abroad and he did pay some of the price, but he was divorced a bit from the struggle.
Exactly. And he didn't do too badly. But Jacob Zuma also had his way and became president because of the platform people like Mandela gave him. We won't hold him responsible for all those. But, you know, it's not easy to find a black man who, up till today, is almost the greatest statesman of all time. Mm. Not being a religious leader.
Yeah.
There was a man that would be at the United Nations General Assembly and would get standing ovation time and time again, not once, not twice. You know, across nations, across cultures, amongst world leaders, he just had that respect. It is not easy.
Yeah.
So he's my man.
Okay. Do I dare to ask you if you could live anywhere in the world, apart from Nigeria, because I know you are a Yoruba di, as they say. Would you live if you could live anywhere in the world?
Okay, it's good that you've excluded Nigeria.
I've excluded Nigeria, yes.
I'll still put a caveat that there's Lagos, and it's amazing that it's Lagos that I miss in the whole world. I don't miss London, seriously speaking. But my favorite place in the world, apart from Nigeria, is Cape Town.
It's beautiful.
I love Cape Town.
Are the people warm? Because it's a beautiful place.
Yeah. Now, because I'm work-driven.
Yeah.
And the people I work with are based in Cape Town, and they are warm to me.
Yeah, I guess.
So, but I'm work-driven, and because of this project, our main project managers are based in South Africa.
Right.
And it's a place we travel to frequently over the last decade or so. And I feel at home in Cape Town. Okay. I love it.
Okay. So are you a morning person or a night owl?
I think I'm a morning person.
Oh, gosh. How morning is morning? 8, 7, 6? Or are you one of those that wakes up at 5 a.m. and starts planning the day?
I think 6.
Oh, my goodness. That's practically that's punishment.
Yeah. I think 6. I'm a morning person. I'd rather just get it over and done with, start early and finish early.
Don't tell me you'll go and start exercising at 6 a.m. again or run around
Guess
the
what?
Block.
Guess what? What? I do exercise early in the morning, sometimes as early as 5:30.
That's what I was afraid you were going to say.
Yeah, and I love it.
I hate you already.
And I love it.
God. God. Okay. So what are you reading? I mean, because I've read Netflix and Chill. I've got Loving Colour next on my to read.
Okay, good.
What are you reading?
What I'm reading presently is a book called Blueprint.
Okay, what's that about?
By Robert Plomin.
Okay.
And I'm reading Blueprint in the context of what's happening generally in Africa, mm-hmm. Nigeria, and what's currently happening in South Africa. It's to study it, how DNA plays a role in who we are.
Gosh.
Because I'm asking the questions all the time. When I'm in America, sometimes if I have a free time, I'll just sit in a shopping mall. I'll look at the blacks, and I can see how disconnected they are. And
from
I know that
disconnected from what? From their society or from
themselves? Their society. You can almost see people dangling with no identity.
Yeah,
and that's why you find that even amongst the black Americans or African Americans, they like to distinguish between the ADOS and the other blacks. ADOS being African American descendants of slaves.
Yeah, but isn't that a construct, a deliberate construct?
But they did it themselves. The blacks themselves formed the association.
Yeah, but because they're being conditioned, as Malcolm X said, who taught you to hate yourself?
Exactly. You know, so that's what I'm looking at. That's why I'm reading this book. Because I think ultimately it's because you don't have that iconic black nation.
Yeah. It was a deliberate plan, also I hear, to disconnect a whole body of people from their roots, even the way they were made to live, the men from the women, so they didn't get to raise their children. And the same thing in apartheid South Africa, where the men went to work and whole towns would be decimated of men. So no family structures.
Yes, but then, you see, we should, over the last 50, 75 years, we should have been able to have that one country. I look at Ethiopia, that technically was never colonized.
Colonized.
And in a way, exactly, in a way, almost the same language. What you have in Ethiopia are not tribes, they are clans. Almost all of them are same. So that's what I'm reading
so
about.
So what is
this,
the Eritrean and the Tigrayan? I don't really know enough about that. But
exactly.
They're not
the
tribes.
Same thing here.
They're
not tribes. They're clans.
It? Oh, right. Clans, yeah. Yes. It's like Somalia, isn't it? They're clans.
It's like Somalia. Exactly.
Yeah.
So you ask why... I would like to know more. I would like to know more whether it's still down to the history of slavery.
Yeah, it's the throes. It's not so much... I mean, there's slavery, but also it's the artificial welding of people together who had nothing in common, and you're having to force yourself. I mean, the America is still not, they're
but
still
Shade,
terribly divided. Like the Republicans, they could have been a totally different tribe. And you wonder what language they're speaking, because it's certainly not English. And no logic can make them speak the English language, as you know.
Exactly.
So I think it might well be a problem of humanity. We just do not get along with each other.
Yes, but you then ask yourself, how come, if it's a problem of humanity, how come all these small countries thrive? You see a country
well,
as
that's
smaller,
what I
like
mean.
Luxembourg?
Because they're smaller, the fault lines are smaller, and there's more homogeneity. It's like people are claiming that the Fulanis are oppressing people because the South, Southerners are divided. They're homogeneous people.
They're homogeneous people.
If it's true, yeah. I'm not sure it's true, but that's the argument.
Yeah, exactly. But even if you look at that, we still have the issue of the human development.
Yeah.
Whether they're Fulanis, Igbos, Efik, Tiv, Yorubas. In all this strife and the instability, are we still focused on development? I'm not sure. So I want to study that more.
Well, tell me what you get. Get there, we'll have this conversation again when
yes,
you finish
definitely.
Reading it. So,
yes.
Okay, tell me, what are you listening to music-wise?
Music-wise, I'm quite eclectic about music.
Okay.
I listen to any and everything from very old.
Maybe like Obama's summer playlist.
Exactly, from
so
very
what,
old school to the
yes.
young ones.
Okay, tell me what.
Sometimes my children are shocked about
what you're listening to.
Exactly. But right now, it's old school, actually, that I'm listening to right now. I don't know what started it. Just about 6 weeks now, I've just been listening to Dolly Parton.
Ah, you know, she's amazing. She's an amazing songwriter.
Yeah. You know, exactly. She writes her own song, and so you can see the soul in the song. So that's what I've been listening to for the last 6 weeks.
Yeah. So which one? Jolene or I Will Always
Love
You?
I've done Jolene. Now it's Coat of Many Colors.
Oh, wow.
That I've been listening to since yesterday. And guess the one that I have next on my playlist.
Which one?
Is if a film that's just been released by Tunde Kelani, I've not watched it.
Yeah.
It's on a Yoruba musician called Ayinla Omowura.
I've heard of him. My grandmother loved him.
Yeah, he played a type of music called Akpala.
Akpala music, you know? Yes.
Yes. So I haven't got a single CD or whatever of this man. So
yeah,
I've requested for it. And guess who? So Adedo is looking for that for me. So
are you introducing the children to this?
Yes, actually. They actually don't really enjoy them that much, but when they are stuck in the same car with me,
they have to listen to it. So you go on long drives and take the scenic route.
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, those two.
Okay, brilliant. And are you watching anything on Netflix or DSTV?
No, actually, I'm generally not a film person. Everyone in the house complains that I flick from one news channel to another.
Yes, I know your daughter is a Love Island person, so there.
No, I do Al Jazeera, BBC, Sky News, CNN, CCN, which is Chinese.
Yes. No, I do Euro News. Enjoy that channel, actually.
Yeah, just CCN is very good, actually. People miss it. They are very good.
And
programs.
Good coverage of African news as well, sometimes.
Yeah, so I do that.
Okay. So describe yourself in 3 words.
Oh, my goodness. How do I describe myself?
Uh-huh.
That's actually a challenge. Where am I? Where?
You're going to rise to it, I'm sure.
In three words. Yeah, I don't want to agree with you I think it gets me to trouble every now and then if I agree that I can be very deliberate.
Okay.
So when I do things inadvertently, nobody wants to forgive me. They still think
so they think you are being strategic. That's the word in Nigeria.
Exactly.
You are strategic. that man is strategical.
They will know that. No, I just did it. It's part of the moment.
God. It's God. I didn't know.
Exactly.
Okay. So
they say, which God? Don't mind him. He meant it. He planned it.
He planned the whole thing. Okay. So you're intentional.
Yeah, intentional. Am I laid back? Yeah, I think I can be, actually.
Laid back? Yeah.
Yeah.
There's one more.
One more. No, the third one I shouldn't say.
Oh, please. It's only me.
The third one I shouldn't say, you know. Intentional, laid back.
Don't worry, I'm not going to let you off.
I was hoping you'd say, okay,
no way.
Oh my goodness. You got me there, actually.
I was hoping you'd then sort of take pity and say he's struggling.
Let me let him off the hook. I know your strategy
and I'm
I thought you were gonna let me off the hook.
Nope. I'm waiting.
Okay. I'll still avoid that third one that I think. So I'll say the third one is faith. But it's not faith that I wanted to say. I'll tell you that one later.
you're so strategic. You're trying. You're still dodging the thing. Okay,
yes.
I give up.
Hallelujah.
You got me. Only because I'm going to extract something else from you. Don't worry. I'm strategic too. If you think you're strategic,
so
I am.
It's not free.
Strategic. It's not. There's no free lunch. No. No, I woof.
Yeah, I tell you.
Okay, so you have to tell me a really funny joke now. Since you got off on the third description.
No, that one is not difficult because I don't have any joke to tell.
Oh, okay, I'm waiting. Any joke to steal from somewhere else or whatever? Or a story, a funny story, anything?
A funny story, a joke. Which one then? See, I'm not even following my own daughter's footsteps. steps and just find a story to tell or tell a joke?
Yes.
Maybe you have to remind me of one that's popular, then I'll say.
I don't know any popular jokes. Okay. You really are strategic. You got me. And this is not good. Not many people get me on this. Okay, so tell me your favorite comedian. At least you have that.
My favorite comedian?
Yeah. You don't want people to think you have no sense of humor.
No, my favorite comedian, I want it to be a Nigerian, but all the favorite comedians coming to my head are not Nigerians.
Ali Baba. I don't even know his jokes.
Don French is my favorite comedian.
Okay. The Vicar of Dilby.
The Vicar of Dilby.
Yes.
I know she does stand-up comics anyway.
Yes. And French and Saunders. She did
French and Saunders, exactly.
Yes. What do you like about her kind of humor?
Funny.
Yeah.
Witty.
Yeah.
And even when you know that you're just watching a play, you know, that's scripted, it still comes like it's not scripted.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So I can watch a program a million times. So I like a joke.
I think something intelligent about her humor, and it's never cruel, which a lot of comedians tend to fall into
exactly. I think you captured it very well, because I was trying to look at her interaction with the church assistant.
Yes.
And now she tries to be kind with her.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing.
I mean, she manages to get the humor there without being at the expense so much. You know, it's kind. There's a kindness
exactly.
to her humor. And that's difficult to do.
Sometimes she makes herself the butt of the joke.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, it's more often than not that she's the butt of the joke.
Exactly.
And she's body confident. You know.
Exactly. You know, a lot of people won't even do that.
No.
Some of our jokes have to do with our body. They
absolutely.
Can't. They can't. That's why they'll be going for counseling.
Yeah. Oh, no. I've had an amazing time. I don't know about you, but I've had a great time.
Same here.
So you've been an amazing guest. Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
And how do people get hold of you if they want to? If they want to come and view Gracefield Island, how do they do that?
As you would have guessed, WhatsApp is the best platform of communication for me.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm super efficient when it comes to taking phone calls.
But you're on LinkedIn.
I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay.
You know, I'm on LinkedIn. And,
okay, so it's Femi Babalola on LinkedIn.
I think so, actually.
You think so? Okay. But if you want to come and view
actually,
I usually
do Olufemi Babalola.
Okay.
Because there are quite a number of Femi Babalola.
Oh, there are so many Femis. Yes. It's like so many.
But I realize that not many use the full ones. Yeah, so I just stick to Olufemi Babalola.
Olufemi or Babafemi or Obafemi.
Olufemi Babalola, yeah. Yes.
Olufemi Babalola.
On LinkedIn.
Yeah, so and, if they want to come and view the island with the
welcome.
Buying or whatever, how do they do that and how do they get that?
They can just do gracefieldisland.com.
Okay.
And they can then connect with some of our team members that can arrange it. And anytime I'm on the island, I'm there most of the time these days, I'll be happy to personally welcome them, show them around. For us, it goes beyond even buying. We want people to know that this is happening and it's for us, actually.
And it gives some faith. I mean, it just gives people some hope for the country, to be honest.
Hopefully.
This has been done by Nigerians. And I think that's
that's important to us. That it's been
as
done
we
by
say
Nigerians.
In Nigeria, that's what shocks me.
Thank you.
That's what
we are able
me.
To shock you.
Yes.
So, thank you. Yes,
thank you. So that's gracefield.com. And please get in touch with us on, we're on Twitter. Well, via whatever. I'm not claiming. Now that government has said no, we're on Twitter via somewhere else. We send it to somebody who then tweets for us. So it's at @banana_living. We're on Instagram, Banana Island Living. And we also mail at bananaislandsliving.com. And please remember to subscribe, share, and give us a 5-star rating. Thank you, and see you in 2 weeks' time. Take care.